Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men Weekly podcast. I'm Steve Hoy here to bring you the best clips from the previous week's worth of content over on Red Men Plus. For those who don't know, Red Men Plus is our subscription service. You can sign up at redmenplus.com, get all these shows that you're about to listen to in full, in both video and in podcast forms as well. If you're on Spotify and you don't fancy signing up through the website, if you go to Spotify and just search for Red Men Plus podcast, you can sign up there directly. Don't get access to the videos, but you do get access to all the podcasts directly into your Spotify feed. But if you want the videos and you want them in another app that isn't Spotify, redmenplus.com is the place to go. Right then, let's start off. Bonus episode this week, of course, you've got two final word shows given the fact that the Reds have played twice, obviously. So yeah, let's start off with the final word show from Wolverhampton Wanderers. Yeah, Liverpool going behind against Wolves, but coming back to beat them. I was delighted to be joined by Steve Plunk and Ross Chanley, two absolute legends of the Red Men TV Hall of Fame. So yeah, check out what Steve and Ross had to say about Liverpool's win over Wolves. Cody Gakpo scores and then, like, he's off.
Yeah.
we've had conversations in the past, like, Klopp's ruthlessness or lack thereof at times. I think something that's been labelled that, and like Steve mentioned before, lack of ruthlessness slash stubbornness. Like, I picked this team, they'll get it right eventually. Even though two of those lads are involved in the goal, in Jota and Gakpo, they're off. He goes Nunez and Harvey Elliott. Like, we saw in the week a little bit, he mentioned about the conversation he had with Jordan Henderson. I was like, yeah, I want you to stay, but you're not going to play as much. Like, it does feel like maybe we've overplayed the whole lack of ruthlessness, because there's another example, really. It's like, I don't care if you've scored and you've had a pre-assist or whatever you want to call it, you're getting off because I think it's better for the team. Because a lot of managers there would go to Nunez, yeah, put your bid back on, or go to Elliott, put your bid back on. But he was like, nah, I'm not particularly pleased with what I've seen there. Gone, these lads are coming on.
Well, I think it's that, but I think he's also got to manage their minutes, because again we're playing Thursday, then Sunday, and then we're on a bit of a run of games now before more international football. But also he's got to manage, like, the personalities. Like, he's, you know, forget he's not a manager of just like the minutes, he's a manager of like keeping people happy at the same time as well. I'm sure Nunez is like, would love to start that game. I know he's been to, you know, international duty, but good run of form. I think I can make an impact, and he comes on. And I think it's a testament to Klopp to have so many changes and so many people come in, well, and out the door at the same time, to keep everybody happy. Sounds like you're probably pre-organised, do an hour, but you might start on Thursday, or you're going to start on Sunday against West Ham. It's about managing all those minutes. If he's getting the best out of everyone and juggling all these players' happiness and goals, then fine.
Suppose as well, Steve, we've had this conversation plenty of times, and this isn't a criticism of anyone or like downplaying his impact, because Klopp did have a major impact for a lot this season. He's been impacting games from the bench. It helps have better players on your bench. I know it might sound really easy to say, but like, it's easy to bring Darwin. It's easy to get a tune out of Darwin Nunez, Luis Diaz, and Harvey Elliott than it is, if, you know, for example, with all due respect, bringing on Ben Doak at the end of last season, or Oxlade Chamberlain, Naby Keïta. Of course, it's going to be, and that isn't a disrespect to Ben Doak. By the way, he's a young kid. He's got a bright future ahead of him. But you get my point. It's Luis Diaz. It's Darwin Nunez. That just shows, right, doesn't it? I thought Liverpool in 21-22. When we kept winning games off the bench, well, it wasn't a surprise. We were bringing Luis Diaz on, we were bringing these lads on. Bobby Firmino was getting off the bench and stuff. It doesn't half help when you've got a good squad that you can make these changes.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the reverse fixture last time when we played them and we got our arse handed to us big time by them, didn't we? we're looking for a spark and the board goes up and no disrespect to him because he's a consummate pro, we love him, but James Milner's not your guy to go to for
when you're 2-0 down
and you're looking for someone to make a difference. You're bringing these lads on. Harvey Elliott has obviously accepted at a tender age he is that his game time is going to be a bit limited because he's seen all these lads come in. They're all brilliant. They're all really tight grip unit. You know, they're all, you can see when they celebrate goals how much it means to them all. Comes on and is absolutely superb, and he's been doing that all season. And you know, again, we talk about Endo accepting his role in the squad early on, or rather I did. I think Elliot has to recognise that I think he plays in Europe more than he does in the Premier League for me, and that might be why he didn't start or he didn't play longer in that game, but when he comes on, he's effective straight away and he's a, you know, brilliant forward thinking player, and that's what you want. And go back to the point before, when you go to these old guys, older guys, 32, 500 games under your belt, and the legs have gone completely. Yeah. I think Szoboszlai's made 10 times the amount of dual winners that Henderson had at the same point this season, if I saw stat over the weekend. Credit to them for what they've done, but you do have to look at what comes next. You do have to move on. We're just a different team now. The energy in the team is ridiculous. And the camaraderie is growing game by game. Look at the passion in them when they celebrate goals. So, yeah, it's nice to look at the bench and go, right, OK, so I can afford to bring Darwin on, I can bring Diaz on, and I can bring Elliott on. They're three of your most forward-thinking...
Can I say Gravenberch on?
It's nice to see it, and you now think when you need something, you look at the bench and think... Okay, we can do this.
Imagine the mental impact on Wolves as well. It's literally that Roy Hodgson gift that you used to love. Like, you know, Gakpo's going off. Oh, fuck Nunes.
I've been a manager. And sometimes we get the hand you dealt more so what I did than he did. And you're looking for something in the game, you turn around and look at your bench and you think, nah, it's not coming off there.
Yeah.
So if you get beat 4-0, they don't have to be involved in the bollocking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that makes a big difference. But now he's looking at the bench thinking, this is great, this, because I can bring these guys on. Harvey Elliott's absolutely mustard at the minute. He's in great form. He's really, really pivotal to forward-thinking football, which is, I said in the end of the season stuff when we did the pod, that I felt Liverpool would play on the front foot for most of the season this year. And that's what we're doing with the substitutions we're making. They're all attack-minded substitutions. I love to see it, and I'm here for it, 100%.
What did you make of the... We were talking about the goals shortly, Ross, but like between the... I think it's like half an hour between the equaliser and the winner... Like, it felt like Liverpool were pretty much in control of that game. There was a couple of half chances here and there for Wolves on the counter a little bit, but not too much. It did feel like the Reds were turning the screw. It felt like a little bit like Liverpool of old. It was almost a case of, like what you said, there will be a chance here. Can you convert it? Another question. But again, even though it took half an hour, what were your thoughts on that performance in the second half?
Well, in comparison to the first half, it was night and day, wasn't it? And I think that's where like the mentality of the fan comes in, thinking like things are going to be okay. Like you've just alluded to there, of like the options that you've got, it's different when you're not relying on just one person to be that spark and be that difference. There's like six lads at the front there. You think, well, I've actually, funny enough, it wasn't not at the front, it was a left back. But like, you know, you're backing people to kind of go forward and produce something. You know, you need a bit of luck, you need determination, you need that mentality and that attitude to go and do it now. But the first half was night and day, but I think it's night and day to performances we've seen last season, which we've all said, which is a major difference. Now, you know, Wolves have players that have been on international duty and would have been in the same situation as us. But once we start taking possession, control of the football, that's where we start to tire them out and they start to feel frustrated and they can't get hold of the ball like they were doing to us in the first half. But again, you know, I joked about it. But imagine thinking that, you know, you got it to 1-1 or it's at 1-1, you're doing all right, just dig your heels in, and we're making the substitutions that we are doing. It's mentally destroying as well as physically.
Yeah, well, definitely physically for them, because we saw a couple of their better players, they have to go off. So Belgrade, I thought he had a good debut for Wolves in the field. He had to go off. I know when he goes off with a little Sutton as well.
Cunha comes off as well, doesn't he? Which I thought
Cunha comes off. Well, he was on the naughty step of thing after this. He was pretty dreadful. But it did look like Liverpool had worn Wolves down a bit. And with all due respect, it's obvious. Like, at that point, if you're Wolves' 15th, 16th option, you're probably not that good compared to Liverpool's 14th, 15th, 16th option. It just felt like we were tearing the screw, we were moving, and a couple of lads going down cramped. Craig Dawson had a really good game at the back, but he looked knackered. It felt like it was coming, I thought.
Yeah, it felt inevitable, didn't it? You know, you said before it's a bit early to be thinking about the vibe that we had when we won the title, but is it? Because we've got that same kind of team spirit at the moment. We go down to Wolves, and last season you'd be thinking, I can't see a way back into this. We sat here and talked about that week after week, didn't we? Now you're thinking, OK, we've got options, we've got better players, we've got difference in the way we're playing more front foot football. I'm confident we can get this back. I didn't panic. maybe if Cunha scores a header, it's a different feeling, but he didn't. And we grow into the game and we turn the screw and we start creating angles and we start doing a little bit more, and the four up top are pulling them all over the place. You made a really good point there about Salah starts to get a little bit more freedom. Just a different dynamic, a different test for them, and it's like it keeps coming. Like when they were 2-0 up and we brought Milner on last year, it's like, okay, that's fine, he's going to sit midfield, he can't hurt us. Look at who's coming off the bench now. You're thinking, I play an international duty this week. I'm goosed and they're bringing these lads on. They're going to run me all game. So it's nice to have. And I said before, you know, previous times, we've got probably the best five forwards, I'd say, in European football in terms of a group. Mm-hmm. The standard and the quality of them. It's finding out where the partnerships are to make the changes at certain times to make it effective on the day. There's definitely a relationship between Salah and Diaz. Salah and Darwin, and there's definitely a relationship between Elliot and Salah, so bringing those two on at the same time, creating that little triangle on the right hand side, pays dividends, doesn't it?
Before we speak of the goal, this is where Kwanzaa goes off just before it, Ross. Thrown in a little bit, listen, Newcastle away wasn't easy for him, don't get me wrong, but it was a cameo at the end, wasn't it? A little bit, I think Matip was fatigued, comes on against Aston Villa when, you know, the game's over, everyone's in their flip flops, starts away at Wolves, the team are shite for the first half, we've kind of put it there. Again, who knows what Gerald Kwanzaa said this do that. He might play 10 games for Liverpool, he might play 100 games for Liverpool, 1,000. Who knows, whatever it's going to be. Like as full debuts go, it's probably about as good as you're going to get from a young centre-half, really. It's hard to ask for too much more from him.
No, I don't think he was at fault for the first goal, certainly. I think he does really well. I think he actually does enough to put Cunha off for the header in the first place. So, you know, he misses the ball, but, you know, he's still making an impact, he's still being effective, so fair play to him. You know, I think it's almost a testament that he almost went under the radar for, you know, best in the first half, but it wasn't like, at no point was I panicking about that. It never even crossed my mind during the game about, you know, we got a young kid at centre back. It was everything else that was off. But like, again, it just plays into that whole thing of like, there's people around him that can support him, can help him, and got the energy levels to be able to do that. Second half performance obviously helps a lot. I don't think he's got as much to do. But I think the fact that, I suppose if Jurgen Klopp picks in, Jurgen Klopp packs you, you're going to have confidence in your ability, what you're going to do. But he just seems really calm, composed on the ball, and that will have huge benefits for him that game. Like, I'd be frustrated about conceding the goal, but I said it wasn't his fault. But to turn around, say you come on scathed away to Wolves in your debut for Liverpool, fair play to him.
It's the composure that I like, Steve, more than anything else. And he takes up really good positions. There's a counter attack that he just gets his head on. There's a couple of times where he reads the game really well. Like, again, he's been at Liverpool since he was 7. He's been part of the Jurgen Klopp team for not that long, really, when I was on loan. But he's been brought through like in the Klopp manner, because that's what the academy is. It's right from top to bottom. It looks like for the first time, Liverpool are bringing him through a centre-half who's been developed in this model. You know what I mean? Like, he's, like I say, Klopp's been here now, what, 8 years? So Gerald Kwanzaa was like 12 when it all happened. And it was like, right, here's what we want from our centre-backs. Our centre-backs need to be able to do this. They need to be quick, strong, blah, blah, blah. And it's almost like he's the first one of those that are coming through. With all due respect to Sepp van den Beek, Billy Kometio, Nat Phillips, Rhys Williams, there was all different things about them that didn't make them fit what a Jurgen Klopp centre-back looks like. Gerald Kwanzaa looks like a Jurgen Klopp centre-back, really.
He does. A couple of really good challenges on the stretch as well, when it was like last-ditch type of things, which we see a lot from Konate and at times from Virgil. I think Ross's point that you kind of forgot he was there. Big show of confidence to put him in, because Konate could have played, but he didn't choose to play him. He chose to give him an extra hour's rest and then put the lad in. So if you're looking for a vote of confidence to make you feel even better about yourself, there it is, slotted in there. Absolutely, I'd say seamless. You know, not like you made the point not to worry about things like Rhys Williams had his limitations. Nat Phillips was a phase one ball winner and nothing else really. This kid will be fine, and he might save us 30, 40 million quid in the next couple of years, which, you know, we can invest elsewhere in the squad.
Thanks to Steve and thanks to Ross for coming in for that one. Right, next up is the Biased Football Podcast. You've got Paul, you've got Chris, you've got Chloe, and you've got Dan Club talking about other things that aren't Liverpool related. One of the very few shows where we do look at the wider context of the football landscape. So yeah, here's Paul and the guys on this week's Biased Football Podcast.
Fighting the boss, and like Milner as well, going back to Old Trafford and picking up Lallana. So some nice little touches in there. But yeah, biting the job. proper side. United are miles off it. Yet again, Casemiro looked like running treacle all afternoon, ends up getting dragged. Then that Hannibal comes on and celebrates like they've just won the game.
Yeah.
With his goal, which was hilarious.
What was that
in itself. Yeah, remember when he came on against us, by the way? They were all buzzing off him because he just kicked everyone for 20 minutes.
he was that player. And I remember thinking when he came on and going, this is going to be that performance where. To get the young lad, at least he'll run round and get stuck in a bit. Like, that's when you know you're fucked. When young players come on and they snap people, and that's your positive from the game, that's when you know how far you've fallen. They're rubbish, Chloe. They're a mess from top to bottom. Mm. There's not an element of Manchester United Football Club that isn't in crisis at the moment. And it's great. And let's do Casemiro. Chris and I were discussing this morning. He's just fell off a cliff. Shock. Like, he had a really good season last season. Fair, it looked like a really canny purchase, but I said at the time,
really canny purchase for 50 million
quid. No, yeah, it was stupid money for a guy who Real Madrid don't let go lads who've got loads of time left on the clock, who are at that level, and now they've now put all their eggs in a 30 odd year old defensive midfielder who's got a bazillion miles on the clock, and who's won everything in the game and has nothing left to prove. And he's having a crap season. I mean, they're defending him because they will. He's in Goldbridge going to bat for him when he's happy. He'll happily slaughter Harry Maguire, but he won't slaughter Casemiro. Again, I just can't help but just think it's all hilarious.
Yeah, it's brilliant where they are. I mean, Casemiro looks like Fabinho of last season.
Yes, yeah.
And Fabinho played...
But much faster, but more circular.
And Fabinho played like 4 years back to back. No games because he was your number one DM. And like you mentioned there, he was part of one of the greatest midfields in European football. Him, Cruz and Modric at Real Madrid. There is no way that unless Real Madrid thought he was on the decline and 50 mil was absolutely outrageous for a 30-year-old, why would they sell him otherwise? Because they've still got the other two still hanging around there. Modric, you know, Saudi League wants them. There's been quite a few who wants them, but they still offer him a year contract here and there. They didn't do that with Casemiro. They let him go as soon as. It's really funny. And you know what was shocking was I actually don't think they started the game that bad. I thought they actually got themselves about. They had a couple of chances, I think. Rashford.
Sorry, Chloe, I've just googled it. 70 million they paid for him.
I thought it was 50.
That's literally
that
insanity.
Outrageous.
He was 30 at the time.
Yeah.
My Christ. That is diabolical running to a football club, that.
One season out of him. Yeah.
He started quite well. Off was a bad buy last summer.
Moving on to them, there was a hole. I thought they didn't do well at the start. I think Rashford has a really good chance where like he scuffs it. It's a really slow ball. But once De Zerbi and Brighton found them out and they changed the tactics, Manchester United were chasing shadows. They've got Bruno Fernandes. How is he your captain? That lad Stinks just lets it, people run off him here, there and everywhere. The ball for João Pedro, I think it is, who scores, which Onana has had an absolute mare for, by the way. Any other goalkeeper in the league just palms that away. Bruno Fernandes just sees him, just, like, come on, lads, you just... come on the edge of the box. It doesn't track back. None of them track back. They're from top to bottom. And Erik ten Hag can come out and say Sancho needs to apologise to me or this or that because I've been told I need to set the standards here because Manchester United don't have any. Look at Rashford not chasing people back. Your captain doesn't chase anyone.
He's
back.
Not even passing to the centre forward you've just signed. How many times was Hoyland on there for a pass and Rashford just going down a blind alley?
You've got too many lads who think they're it. The big I am and not enough team players. They've brought in Serge Reguilon because Luke Shaw had a nightmare and has got injured. Reguilon couldn't even make a back four for Spurs. Never mind, like, you're Manchester United. You've got Harry Maguire there who's just being absolutely ripped apart and there's going to be no protection for that lad. You've brought 50 million in for Onana who can't save, literally buffer hands over in goal, just lets everything go
can't
in
can't save just
um,
Johnny Evans. Do you want to mention Johnny Evans?
Johnny Evans, how is he? Ended up back there. Wan-Bissaka, I thought he was dead a year ago.
He's injured now, isn't
he? He's out, yeah. No, well, that's the breaking news before we went live on this one. He's now off for 7 weeks with a hamstring injury. So they've got two fullbacks. They've got Reguilón and Dalot as their fullbacks, basically.
And don't forget, Lisandro fucking spends more time lying on the floor than fucking anything else at the moment.
The butcher.
I was thinking,
are you sure that's not just the angle?
No, I'm sure, yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's just a borrower. One of the problems that I think they've got, right, is we were talking about this before. We've spoken about this on this show a couple of times. Is I still can't tell what Ten Hag is. Oh, yeah. I don't know their style of play. What I do know is I think they've got a real old school manager, you know, whip the cane type of a fucking guy. And I don't think that works in football anymore.
No.
I think the players are paid too much money. They want to be treated as equals. Mm. They want you to talk to them. They want you to trust in them. And they've got this guy in to manage the club like Sir Alex Ferguson managed the football club. And he's not Sir Alex Ferguson, and it's not the era of Sir Alex Ferguson. No. So they've got this fucking huge, bald problem that is Eric Ten Hag.
I have a degree of sympathy. A born and bred Scouser Liverpool fan can have any degree of sympathy for anything associated with Manchester United Football Club, is that anyone else, he comes in and he gets a run at it, but it's like, this is a disciplinarian thing. He's got no choice because he's got to tackle this stuff because he can't let it slide because the Ronaldo thing is could have foisted upon him. He's got to make it. And I said this at the time, he let that run too long. He should have walked in the club and said, right, you're out from minute one. But they never. They let Ronaldo ultimately have the power with that. And he managed to just come out with some reasonably positive PR out the back of it. But it left them in January with Wout Weghorst as the centre forward.
Why didn't he choose him?
Yeah, because he'd worked him before. They got Tony prima donnas, haven't they?
Because he'd let this comes around in the January, it gets negotiated. It's stupid. And now he's got the Sancho thing and he's handling that bad because he's having to firefight. It's a bit like Rafa under the Hicks and Gillette. You've got too much other stuff going on. You're not actually getting to coach your players because you're firefighting. You've got a crisis manage at every single turn. Don't get me wrong, again, I think that's amazingly hilarious, but it's impossible to tell whether he's a good manager or not. Is he a good man manager? It doesn't look like it. I don't know, you know, are the players all pulling for him? Can you see he's got a great relationship with anyone? I'm not sure. I don't watch enough of them to be able to say that. But when you're publicly slating lads who've quite publicly also stated they're having mental health issues, that's not a great look. Let's be perfectly honest. He was getting kind of pushed down a road with the Mason Greenwood stuff as well for a little spell of that. And again, there's just a huge weight of expectation on that football club.
There's signing players that you've worked with before. That's a funny thing, that, because obviously you might think they're fucking brilliant,
Rodgers.
But then you might just go, well, I'm trying to set a tempo in this club, or a way of doing things, I should say, in this football club, and I know they're going to do it. But that's a weird thing. You didn't actually fucking win much.
No.
You know what I mean? They weren't setting the world alight and all this type of stuff. You've gone
and Postecoglou's not lined the squad with Celtic players,
exactly,
is he?
Exactly. This is Manchester United. They're supposed to be competing for the Premier League. And you've got lads who haven't done it in Italy, who haven't done it everywhere else, and you think they're going to suddenly gel. And also, it's going to create a division in the squad as well of his guys and not his guys. Yeah. And that's not the way to build a football club either.
It's mad. Jürgen Klopp quite famously doesn't like working with lads that he's worked with already, because you want fresh messaging and you want new approaches and all that kind of stuff. And I feel it's just a bit odd. And they spent ludicrous money on these players as well, by the way. I mean, what did they pay for Anthony? Anyone?
70-80,
wasn't it? Yeah. But the due diligence on him signing is just non-existent. But he is very
culpable. Did Nana leave for free under him?
He did, he left him there.
And then he bought him back for 50?
Yeah, okay. He's a terrible keeper. I said this from day one.
He
is culpable.
Holy shit, sorry. How much did he pay for Anthony?
80 mil.
80, I think.
£82 million. Yeah. Initially worth... Yeah.
That's nothing. Rising based on success, so it's still £82 million. But yeah, he made the worst decision he's made for me, and I'll take this to my grave, is Fernandez as captain. The worst captain of a football club that's ever existed.
Don't make your best player your captain.
Yeah, his attitude stinks. Yes. Absolutely stinks. Why do you want him as your captain? You want your captain to be your stage. As much as people sort of deride Jordan Henderson's ability as a footballer, as captain, he was absolutely perfect, like 100%, because that's what you want your captain to be. Not Bruno Fernandes. He's the opposite of what you want a captain to be. Like, I just don't understand it. But again, glorious to see.
I can imagine him in training just not giving a shit because he doesn't want to get injured or he doesn't want to exuberate himself, and it's just a case of why is that your captain? Your captain's supposed to set standards.
Yeah.
Casemiro is the one who probably would set standards last season. He's won it all. Can understand that. You don't give Bruno Fernandes your captaptaincy.
No, well, it came
setting
out
standards at the lunch table.
It came out last week, didn't it? Set. It was one of the it was the assistant manager at the time whose name escapes me at the moment. Terry, it was a feeling, Mike Phelan. And he was speaking about the Ronaldo stuff and saying how like he set standards, but then he got just really annoyed when people weren't matching up to his standards, and that as much as it was a good example in some regards, it then ended up having a downward negative spiral and all that. And that's the problem. Bruno Fernandes has had his nose put out of joint. He's the main man. You get someone else in to be the main man, and now it's no, clear you're the main man again, but you're left with this Ronaldo imprint of what the main man looks like, and that is not pressing and running around and getting stuck in and doing all that. And that was meant to be one of his real, people were telling me like that's what Fernandes is. He's a guy who gets stuck in, and he is high energy and he is tight up. And loads of people say he would be perfect for a Klopp midfield because he does do all the pressing and stuff. He just looks, he's like
the personality test. Yeah.
No. That's
the difference.
The minute things aren't going his way, he's done. Toys out the pram. Done. We've seen it firsthand. 7-0. Yeah, we've seen it firsthand. We've seen him just throwing the towel. And admittedly, it was an absolute mauling. But at the same time, if you're supposed to be the captain of that football club, you're the last one that leaves that pitch. You leave everything out there to make sure you try and put some respect, and he didn't just walk off and say, "That's me, lads, all the best."
Made a point of getting the 7-0 on telly on Saturday, by the way. Couldn't resist it. Yeah. Had to be done.
Also, Erik ten Hag just comes across like a massive arsehole to me. Like,
exactly,
genuine, like
shaved
that arsehole. Amongst other things. But like, the other day when he was moaning about an offside, and I'm like, no, lads, if you can moan about grey areas in which a 50-50, a red card is
not, let's use
not
a camera
lines.
That's not part of the VAR system to determine whether it was offside or not.
Yeah, he comes across like a massive knobhead in absolutely everything I see him do. And I genuinely, at this point, don't think he's that good of a manager. He's definitely not a good man manager. And he needs people and fans to buy into things. He's not doing that. Old Trafford was booing him, taking off Hoyland. He came out and he said, the lad's not up to fitness, which I can understand. He's being injured, that I can understand. But, like, you're sat in Old Trafford and that crowd's booing you. Booing you. Like, if that was me, I'd turn around and say, lads, what do you think yous are doing? Get behind the lads. I've had to do it because this and this. If you want us to succeed, yeah, we need yous all to buy into it.
What are Manchester United, what are the United fans getting behind? What are they buying into with Erik ten Hag? This goes back to Chris's point. What's going to happen? What's going to get better? What's it going to look like? What are they on the road to? And this is, I said, it smells so much like that. Solskjaer must have been in charge, wasn't he, the COVID season?
Yeah.
And they finished second. Mm-hmm. And then Rio Ferdinand's coming out in the summer going, oh, United finished above Liverpool's the miles better. Nah, Liverpool had a series of things that conspired against them, and they were fucked, and they fell below their standards as a result. United didn't beat Liverpool. Liverpool beat Liverpool, and I think this is happening again. Is like they were in a false position last season in a huge way. They were nowhere near good enough to secure that. You know, they were good enough that season to secure that space, but you replay that season 10 times, and United get nowhere near the top four. Because again, it comes back to it. They're in a tricky patch now. They've got no money to spend. And the money they have spent, they've spent over the odds. Again, £82 million on Antony, £70 million on Casemiro, £50 million on a goalkeeper who does nothing to improve the overall level of where they're at. They spent, £80 on a centre-forward who doesn't score goals, hasn't scored goals at a good level in his career prior to that. And When you shit hits the fan, you can always go,
Fred.
He's gone. You can always go, all right, I know what we're trying to do here. I hope to God, for their sake, the Man United fans have got that to cling on to, that they can go, it's all right, because I know that what we're trying to be a possession side, or we're trying to be a counter attacking side, or we're going to be a gegenpressing side, or whatever. I just don't think they do.
No,
it's not obvious what type of football team they are, other than an absolute mess.
Sorry, on Brighton are brilliant, but also, did anyone see the absolute dummy from Adam Lallana for World X goal? Because that is just a piece of brilliance. That's what he does. Outrageous.
Do you reckon he gets a shout there, or that's like worked on
the training?
That's
just him. I think that he was so skillful. Like, his brain was just so far ahead of everyone else on a football pitch.
Was it
I adored him.
The Pascal Gross goal? That was like, I don't know how many passes it was. They went
it
was scary good. The full thing. Like, how many times they went forwards, went back, went forwards, went back across, and then I think the commentator on, I think it was Match of the Day, got in Gross Profits, and I was like, oh, mate, what a way to finish a move, Gross Profits. Well done, sir.
Absolutely outstanding. Yeah, good Man United, still not been bought. Loads of injuries, falling out left, right and centre.
Where are they in the league? Is it 13th or
Statement FC?
I will tell you right now exactly where they are in the league. It's not a great look for them. We've got a couple of other bits to talk about, but I think it's actually an interesting point. Man United are 13th.
And where are Chelsea?
They have 6 points. Chelsea are 14th and have 5 points.
So, how many goals have they conceded? Is it 10?
10. Man United have conceded 10 goals.
In how many games?
In 5 games.
So good.
How many have they scored?
6.
Wow.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Thanks to Paul and the guys for that one. Right, next up, it's Journo Insight with Neil Jones. Yes, this week it was Dan Club in the host's chair. Neil came in, as he often does every single week, to give the inside view from the press box about all things Liverpool Football Club. And this week they had a big old chat about Trent Alexander-Arnold and the reports that he is in talks about signing a new contract at Liverpool Football Club. So yeah, check this out.
Trent Alexander-Arnold contract talks. Now, there's an interesting one. I think I mentioned this to you quite a long time ago. There's reports come out that he's close to an agreement over a new Liverpool contract. He's got less than 2 years left on his current deal. There's speculation about Real Madrid and Barcelona being interested, but that's no huge surprise to anyone, let's be honest. But it's interesting to me because obviously I mentioned 2 years left there. So there's a likelihood that Liverpool are going to want to tie him down anyway. Yeah. But then when you factor in the fact he's obviously so, so important to Liverpool as a footballer, he's now also vice-captain. This makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it, to get a new deal?
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't be, you know, it's not sort of too strange a point to make that the vice-captaincy, I imagine, factors into the contract negotiations, you know, that... It's a sign of how much he's rated and how important he is to the team, and it's a clear succession plan, isn't it? You know, with Virgil, the age that he is. So, yeah, I don't anticipate any problem. I mean, I think it will be interesting to know what sort of impact the Saudi Arabia thing has on where clubs pitch big contract renewals, you know, with key players in the prime, you know, how do you frame it as a great deal when they know that they can earn so much money elsewhere? But I don't anticipate any problems with Trent and his renewal. You know, we've seen players go back on their word in the past, but Trent's sort of entire career has been built around the idea, I want to be Liverpool's main man, I want to captain this club, I want to win everything. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the symbol really of this Liverpool rise under Jürgen Klopp, isn't he? Or one of them in particular. So yeah, we'll see. You don't want to be letting it go too much longer. I think I wouldn't be at all surprised if, you know, within the next month or two, we're talking about Trent, new 5-year contract, or, you know, long term contract, should we say?
Yeah, he's coming into his prime now, isn't he, as well, in terms of age as well. I mentioned obviously his importance to the side, his importance to Jürgen Klopp's plans, his extra responsibility being vice captain. But I wondered whether, obviously, we know Alisson triggered a new clause in his deal to sort of get a pay rise. We know Mohamed Salah's what he's on. Would Trent, not necessarily he's going to go there sort of begging for the same amount of money as what they're on, but he's likely to use that as a yardstick, you would imagine, because that's what agents and footballers do, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's already very well paid, I'm certain of that. And he knows how important he is to the team. There's no disguising it. You know, he's not just an old school sort of vice captain. With all due respect, I mean, James Milner was very important, but James Milner's sort of value to Liverpool as vice captain was off the field more, you know, as much as on the field. Trent is not just the vice captain, he's the hub of the team, really, isn't he? Or one of the hubs creatively. So responsibility he has on the pitch as well is huge. So yeah, there's no chance Liverpool are going to undervalue him. You know, we've seen a few players, haven't we, in the last few months. Mason Mount, I think, is an example of someone who could come through, and don't think anyone ever thought he was going to be leaving Chelsea, and you start seeing it, he feels like they're not treating him right, or they're not giving him the right kind of wages. I don't think Liverpool will make that mistake with Trent, because he's one of those players that, like you say, if he leaves Liverpool, it's only to the top. It's only to Real Madrid. To, you know, I can't ever imagine he'd go to Manchester City. But it's only to the sort of the elite level. He's not someone who you can say to him, well, you know, go on then, you want to take your chances elsewhere. It's only downhill. It's not for someone like Trent. You know, he's world class and of that bracket. So, yeah, it would be madness if Liverpool were to sort of leave any gaps there in terms of, you know, how much he's appreciated, or what they're willing to pay him, or you know, what role they're willing to give him. You know, they've already shown that they're willing to build so much of their current team and the future teams around them.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, the Milner one, he was a very good vice captain for Liverpool, because whenever he did take the armband, he was brilliant, and he was so good around the dressing room. We've seen him sort of going to academy matches and all that. He was a role model, wasn't he? Led by example. But he was never the heir apparent to Jordan Henderson, because he's all going to start. Where was Trent?
Trent's more like a, you know, Steven Gerrard type figure, isn't he? You know, at Liverpool, where, I mean, I don't agree with it, but a lot of people during his time as captain said, well, actually Carragher's more of the captain of Liverpool. Mm-hmm. Steven Gerrard's more of the symbol of Liverpool. But Trent's like that, isn't he? Trent's sort of, you know, he's your boy, isn't he? He's not your sort of, you're in there to shout at people and to sort of, you know, to overtly be that captain figure. He's an example player and someone who sets standards, you know, through his the quality of his play. Obviously, he's got the symbolism of being a local lad and an inspiration to, you know, future generations as a captain. So yeah, he's very much in that Gerrard territory, and I don't think Steven Gerrard was ever let down in terms of his wages that he was being offered. I know he had a little bit of a wobble at one point, but I think that was resolve pretty quickly.
Yeah, Liverpool are going to want to avoid anything of that sort. With this, you know, I mentioned there sort of off the cuff and in passing that Real Madrid and Barcelona have shown an interest, and you mentioned Man City, but this is what we're talking about here. We're talking about a player who, if there's even a sniff of him becoming available, those sort of clubs would be all over. We had it with Levi Colwill to a lesser extent. We thought there might be a chance of getting Colwill out of Chelsea, so we were all kind of sniffing around it. If Trent ever showed any signs of a wobble, there'd be Real Madrid banging down the door.
Yeah, I mean Barcelona, I would question, given their financial issues, that they might have to do a little bit more digging before they can start targeting players like that. But yeah, you're right. Like, you know, it's sort of it's one of them, isn't it? Real Madrid is interested in Trent Alexander-Arnold. I know.
Yeah, of course they are. Yeah,
yeah, no. So is every club in the world. You know, yeah. It's a bit like that, isn't it? But yeah, absolutely. We know he belongs at the top level. He does. And I suppose the other thing, it does bring about a little bit of a pressure of getting back into the Champions League from Liverpool perspective, you know, for players like him. You know, if you were getting to 2-3 years out of the Champions League, it does become that issue then, you know, a bit like Arsenal. You know, Arsenal found themselves in the back end of the Wenger era and then beyond, where players that they would have built their whole sort of world around, they couldn't because they wanted to go and play at that level. So Trent's definitely in that category that, you know, yeah, his phone wouldn't stop ringing if he was ever thinking about leaving Liverpool. And thankfully, I don't think that's going to be an issue anytime soon.
No, normally, like I said, get it wrapped up nice and swiftly, and please, Liverpool, get him tied down. That'd be fine by all of us.
Thanks to Dan and thanks to Neil for that one. Right then, let's move on. I mentioned before, final word, Joe. There was a second one this week, of course, because Liverpool went over to Austria and they went and beat LASK 3-1 again, coming from a goal down. This time around, I was in the host chair again. I was joined by Dom Clark from the Road End podcast and by the absolute legend that is Mr. John Machin for this one. Check it out. John, I'll start with you first. 11 changes. It is a lot, obviously. It's literally the most you can make. Now, some of that was like first team players coming back in, the likes of Virgil and Ibu getting minutes under them. A lot of the changes, I think, were predictable. I suppose the most interesting one was the inclusion of Stefan Bacetic as the auxiliary right-back / midfielder. Was that the one that probably caught your eye the most when the team was announced?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't expecting him to play in the side as a fullback. That's about it, really.
Yeah.
I expected him to play and get some minutes. He's been on the bench for a few games, hasn't he, without getting on at all. I mean, all of the players, you could have picked that team yourself, couldn't you? Because they all needed time on the pitch for various reasons. So it was pretty obvious that team was going to be the 11. I suppose even Diaz and Nunez, it was their turn basically to play, wasn't it? And so you could pick that team yourself. What was surprising for me was the commentators didn't cut them any slack whatsoever. And I don't mind, like, the professional commentator, he just tells you what he sees. But McManaman, he, as a professional footballer, surely he should have been explaining to people how difficult it is to not play for 6 months and get on the pitch and try and play on a pitch like that when people are kicking you. You know, and Gravenberch, I mean, he hardly played for Bayern and he's suddenly playing his first game for us. You know, you go around all of them and you think, well, you know, cut the guy a bit of slack. He's not played for this. You know, Harvey Elliott, he'd got a fair number of minutes under his belt, but only a sub. You know, Doak, you know, coming in, you know, is he 17 now? You know, I mean, every single one of them, you could say, give the guy a break, you know. And yet all we got from the commentators was how terrible they were.
I suppose.
And how they were getting pulled off by, you know, the subs were on the touchline waiting like vultures to come on. You know, I mean, it was annoying, really. And we got exactly what you would expect if you put 11 players on, most of whom hadn't kicked a football for months, you know, or weeks, in, you know, in some cases. And it's always difficult to watch Liverpool when they're not flowing, and because you obviously want them to win, but, you know, give them a bit of time.
I suppose as well, Don, with going back to the Bacetic thing, Gomez has played a lot because there's been injuries. Konate's been injured, Van Dijk's been suspended. So Gomez has played a fair bit. He's done a bit of centre-back, he's done a bit of right-back. They might have just been protecting him ahead of the weekend. Like, there's no guarantee Trent's back. I know he's in light training, but he hasn't fully trained yet. So you are looking around the squad a bit, going, well, who can do a job over there? And it was funny because in the summer I said, I do wonder if Bacetic might be an option because he's used to going into midfield and he's used to having the ball because, again, I'm not going to judge him on yesterday's, but he hasn't played and kicked the ball since March or something, but he did look more comfortable doing the midfieldy bits than the right-backy bits. But again, it might just been a case of, well, Conor Bradley's injured, Trent's injured, we want to look after Joe Gomez, who's our fourth right-back. Go on, Stefan, you've drawn the short straw almost.
Yeah, it feels like that. And, you know, I think, like you said, if Conor Bradley's fit, I think he starts that game.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as John just said there, the criticism I could hear by Cetic getting, I'm thinking, just leave the lad alone. You know, we all know he weren't going to be a 10 out of 10 in that position. That was obvious. He's just playing out for 6 months and he's playing in an unfamiliar position. But like you said, he's probably the best person that could probably come in from the right-hand side into that, let's say, Trent role, which I'm not a fan of playing when Trent isn't playing, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, yeah.
But it kind of feels like we're doing that just in case things do happen to Trent. So
he did look, at times, like the really good number six he was last season.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the things he did, you think, oh, yeah, I remember him doing yeah. that. You know, he is very, very good at some of those things.
I suppose as well, John's just kind of touched on it there, Dom, I'll come to you on it. Like, I wasn't shocked when Liverpool weren't fluent, because obviously there's 11 changes, there's lads who have hardly played, there's some lads who are, you know, there's certain link-ups that have just never played together, you know, Bacchetta, Doak, Elias as a three has never been a thing ever. No. You know, on the other side, you've got Simakas, Gravenberch, Diaz, again, never, ever. So you can understand, like, why it was a bit sloppy. I suppose you're trying to play yourself into the game, and Liverpool kind of were doing that. It wasn't great, but they got done by a bit of a sucker punch goal, really. It was... conceding the corner in the first place was poor, and then they fell asleep at the break, really. There's a guy on the edge of the box, Gravenberch is kind of half blocked. It just looked like
it was a training ground goal.
It was a training ground goal.
It came
goal.
Off yeah. perfectly, didn't it?
It's a worldy strike, don't get me wrong. Yeah. It's just one of those that they've obviously planned for. It just felt like Liverpool, again, a little bit sleepy, because you'd expect probably someone to be maybe a little bit more aware of that as well.
Yeah, it sort of sums where we're at, doesn't it? The start of the season, the first half we've been asleep. Second half probably doesn't happen, let's be honest. And, you know, they've probably looked at our weaknesses and they've exploited it where they can, because they know they wouldn't have played football around us. It's as simple as that. They wouldn't have had enough of the ball. At times, they had too much of the ball for my liking. But, yeah, sort of sums where we're up. And I think we need to get rid of these daft little... I think leading to the corner was a bit of a lazy one from Konate as well. So, yeah, it's a bit... It's one of them, isn't it? Hopefully we get into it and things like this don't happen.
I mean, that for me was the problem. It was conceding the corner in the first place. I think the corner was just a very well-worked manoeuvre. You know, I mean, they blocked us off.
They blocked two of them off, didn't they?
And then the strike was just... He'll never do that again in his whole life.
I was looking because... it was funny because I've seen Ian Doyle on the Echo this morning. He put out, like, very much seen it. Like, the front of the papers in Lask is the fella doing a celebration. They got to be 3-1, but here's this fella mid-air, because it was the stuff of dreams, and it was a world in Kelleher and do nothing about it.
Yeah.
You're right, though, I agree. It was the conceding of the corner is worse, because that can happen. It's a really good move. I'd probably want Gravenberch to do a little bit better going forwards, but again, it's his first game, he's blocked off, it's one of them. What I would say, John, is that usually when we concede in first halves, quite often it gives us a bit of a kick up the backside. Didn't really feel like that. We have the big chance is Darwin's chance, which is a good save by the goalkeeper. Again, it comes from a set piece.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, because I could tell after like 5 minutes that last, with all due respect, of rubbish.
Yeah.
Like, they had nothing, really. They had a bit of endeavour.
They were kicking us, weren't they?
Yeah.
Right from the start, they got stuck in.
Gravenberch got taken out after 10 seconds. That's probably a yellow card at any other time.
Enough.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're right, like, it did feel like...
But I mean, that goes back to the fact that we had 9 players on the pitch who hadn't played for so long. It doesn't matter what happens, you still got to go through the process of getting the minutes in your legs and getting used to the players around you. Gravenberch probably didn't even know half the names.
What I would say on that one, Darwin, he probably should... It's a good save, he should score, Dom, in theory. Like, again, I think... There's not much you can do. I say that he should score, but like all you can do really is knock that on target. You're expecting it to be a goal, but like I say, other than that, it wasn't like their goalie was making save after save or defenders. It was all like I felt Liverpool's decision making in the first half was terrible on the counter attack in particular. Wrong passes, holding it too long. Whether it was Simakas done one on the halfway line.
Simakas was the best. Yeah, he actually went backwards.
Yeah, he just decided not to play it. We have Gravenberch when he plays the wrong ball, I think, once. You have the ball that goes left to Diaz when it should go right to Darwin. Yeah. It felt like just we got into the right positions and just didn't do the right thing with the ball.
Yeah, I feel like with that one, that chance, if he headers that into the ground, no one's getting that. That's just one of them. Like, his decision-making, as much as it's a bit of a reaction header, I think his decision-making needs to be better at times like that, because, you know, a lethal striker...
Discourse.
Puts that in the back of the net. It's as simple as that. There's no real excuse for it. Great save. Don't get me wrong. Had to be there. But again, I thought the chance from Elliot's cross, he should have done better with as well, with his head.
Yeah.
When he headed it over, I think that was as clear as it comes, to get it on target at least. But yeah, it was one of them typical Liverpool first half performances of this season, and we need to get these out the system now. I'd happily get them out now.
Absolutely. I suppose, John, we'll see maybe what the team is against Leicester and then further down the line in this competition. These lads all might be better for the run. And it might be that if this becomes like a bit of a Europa League team, I wouldn't expect Virgil van Dijk to be in that for much longer. You'd expect Matip and Kwanzaa to probably be the back two.
Yeah.
But going forwards, that could be a very similar 11 that we see against
Leicester next week.
And then looking ahead. I mean, Diaz is due of one, he probably might not be in. It might be Jota, but there are going to be times, I imagine Endo, Gravenberch, Elliott might be the three against Leicester and then the three going forward against Union. Yeah. So there might be a bit more cohesiveness, but
it's every week now, isn't it? So those lads are going to get minutes every week, you know, and they should get better and better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because Gravenberch is the odd one, because I don't think he's been bought to be in the second string.
No.
You know, but he'll obviously take time to fit him into the first team. So that's going to be interesting to see how much time he gets against Leicester and against Union.
Thanks to Dom and thanks to John and thanks to all you guys for listening. Like I say, if you want those shows plus a loads more, we've got the more reaction from both games, whether it's the instant match reaction and the player rating show. We've got an expert insight where Dan Club spoke to Zach Osterman, an Atlanta-based journalist, all about Liberty Media and their reported interest in investing in Liverpool Football Club. And again, like I say, tons more. It's all available for you over on redmenplus.com. But thank you very much for listening to this episode of Red Men Weekly. We'll be back with another one next week. See you later.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.